Welcome, everybody, to Revive Health's Daily Briefing Live for Monday, April 13th. This is our 30-minute review of the latest, most important news, resources, and advice for health system marketers and communicators who are dealing with the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Chris Bevelo, Health Systems Practice Lead at Revive Health and your host for the show. I'm joined by Chase Kleckner, Senior Marketing Manager at Revive Health and the show's producer. Welcome back, Chase.
Hey, Chris. Glad to be back.
And we are also joined by Jared Usry, who is Vice President of Revive Health and also perhaps one of the smartest people I know. Serving in the strategy role for his clients, Jared has worked with dozens of healthcare organizations to sort through problems with preference, retention, acquisition, and more. More than anything, Jared believes in marketing being responsible for what consumers and patients want, but also for seeing what health systems can mean to people. Jared, how are you doing?
Doing pretty well, enjoying the productivity of a good Easter weekend, mostly maybe Easter Zoom, like dinner celebration. I've never gotten to host Easter before, but this was a nice first time for Easter Zooming.
Very nice. Very nice. We were going to have an Easter Zoom. Chase, did you have an Easter Zoom, a family Zoom?
No, we just had our own Easter at our own house. I guess we weren't that thoughtful.
Well, it could be a lot of other reasons why.
Yeah, that's true. But
we had a Zoom for my wife's birthday at the end of March, and so we were going to recapture that magic, because it was magic trying to gather the entire family together on Zoom for Easter, and we ended up just giving up on that. So I'm glad, Jared, that you went through with it.
We had 2 weeks of prep beforehand, which I think were critical in resolving all the technical issues. And there was a lot of handholding the first couple of weeks, but now we're up and running. So hopefully a Sunday dinner can be a tradition. So we'll keep it going for a while.
That's great. That's great. Okay. So with each show, we plan on covering the latest news in COVID-19, how it relates to marketing communications for hospitals and health systems. We'll point out some helpful resources. Most importantly, we're going to share what we're seeing and hearing from our comm professionals across the industry. We want this to be an open forum as much as possible. So as we move through the show, make sure you post any questions you would like Jared and I to answer in the Q&A function at the bottom of your Zoom window. We'll get to as many as we can at the end of the show. You can also use the chat function to talk to other attendees, and Chase will be using that to post links as we go along. But if you want us to answer a question, make sure it ends up in the Q&A queue only. Remember that you can find a video recording of this podcast on our website at thinkrevivehealth.com. We have a banner at the top of our homepage that takes you to our COVID-19 communications hub. If you want the URL directly, that's thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19. And also remember to subscribe on iTunes for a podcast, so you can listen to this whenever it is convenient for you. A couple of important notes we always say at the top of the show. We are not experts on COVID-19, so not a place to come for medical or scientific advice or resources. But we do have opinions on how marketers and communicators might want to manage the COVID-19 crisis. Just keep in mind, every situation is different. Every market is different. Every organization is different, obviously, in how COVID-19 is impacting you. So keep everything we're saying relative to your specific situation. So with that, we're going to dive right in. We're going to start with the news. And like we do every show, we start with the latest count. And we do that because it helps us just have an overarching context for what it is we're talking about as we continue to move up through the peak. Obviously, that kind of colors how we think about all this. And as we move down the other side, it'll change the things that we're focused on our priorities. So we use the Johns Hopkins University tool. And when I refreshed it right before we got on, looking at global cases, we're at 1.8 million. So 1,872,073 confirmed cases. And the death toll right now is up to 116,098 total deaths. Now that's globally. When we look at this in terms of just the United States, still really moving high up the chain, by far the number one in terms of confirmed cases. We are now at 558,999 cases, and we are at 22,154 deaths. So something new that we just noticed this morning is the Johns Hopkins University. Maybe it was always there, we just didn't see it. But it's very prominent now on the far right. If you use this tool, they have a count of total testing done in the US. So as of right now, we're at 2.8 million tested. And if we have 558,000 confirmed, if my math is correct, that means basically one in every five or six people who are tested are confirmed. We know these counts are the best that we can come up with, because obviously we've been reading stories about how there are probably more cases than are confirmed because we struggled so much with testing early on. And I would imagine that we're still not testing to the degree that we need to if one out of every five people is testing positive. Because if we were testing everybody who potentially had a symptom, my guess would be it would be lower. So maybe we'll see that spread continue. So the other thing we wanted to jump in on was a story that appeared, and we've been hitting this note for a while now. This was in the Wall Street Journal today that we actually got through it from Apple News. So Chase will post a link to both, both of which are paid wall articles. But if you already have a Wall Street Journal or an Apple News subscription, you can get to it either way. The headline says, excuse me, New York's hospital systems each losing up to $450 million a month battling coronavirus. The first sentence says, New York City's academic hospital systems are losing some $350 to $450 million a month as they respond to a surge of patients with novel coronavirus, while independent and smaller hospital systems are being pushed to the financial brink and may soon be unable to make payroll, according to a top official. Now, Jared, you pointed this one out. Do you have something you want to add to that story?
Yeah, I in New York, you know, I think it's easy to show an example of kind of the what everyone's going through or will go through. And, you know, New York is going to be there fairly rapidly and hopefully will also recover more rapidly than other places if the peak is sooner. But we kind of know that the longer this draws out for specific, you know, organizations in maybe slower hit areas, it actually will have larger financial repercussions possibly because they've already made all the same changes to their hospitals and changing out to create to increase capacity. So likely they've had a lot of expenditures without a lot of that make good on the actual surgical volume to help kind of cover that cost. So I think there's just a kind of a worry here for me on some of these smaller and maybe states that are slower that we'll continue to see this impact over a lot longer period.
Yeah, for sure. The story goes in to talk about the CARES Act and the financial support that the federal government is providing. We have been talking, and if you go read a couple blog posts from our CEO, Brandon Edwards, he mentioned, you know, yes, there's going to be financial support coming from that philanthropy, but the CARES Act is not going to be nearly enough. You know, if you're a hospital losing $450 million a month and you're out for 2 to 3 months, you're talking well over $1 billion just for one health system. And obviously, there's some very large health systems in New York City, when you think of Northwell as just one example. And so the odds that the initial kind of outlay for hospitals and health systems is going to cover the losses are it's really long odds for that. So in fact, that kind of leads us to the topic we're going to talk about for the rest of the session. One thing I did want to mention before we get to that is, don't forget to visit that communications hub I mentioned. You can find the recordings of our podcast every day. You can find each week, twice a week, we put out a report, e-newsletters. So you can find the content of each of those about COVID-19 and communications for hospitals and health systems. You can also subscribe there. And then we also have the latest report on a survey we've done twice now. The last one was just over a week ago, I believe, that asked consumers a lot about how they're reacting to COVID-19 and specifically how they think about hospitals and health systems. So it's a great resource to understand what's happening in your community and how people are thinking of you. So don't forget to check that out. Again, that's at thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19. So, you know, we have been touching on this podcast more and more about what happens next. We've spent most of the episodes really kind of focusing on what folks need to be doing right now during what we're calling the crisis response phase. But as that article just alluded to, hospitals have been hemorrhaging money because of the pause in elective surgeries, outpatient procedures, those kind of services. And as we move to the peak and through the peak, And then hopefully this is coming in the back half of April and come down the other side. Hospitals and health systems are going to have to start turning their attention to reopening those services that have been put on hold. And we've already started working with a number of systems to start what we're calling the rapid recovery planning process because of that financial setback in the need to aggressively refill capacity to help right the ship. There's obviously a focus on those patients that you're currently serving and that you've rescheduled, but can't assume they're all going to be coming back for a lot of reasons. Some of them will postpone further out or may actually cancel the procedures they had already scheduled. So you're going to have to really make sure and mitigate as much attrition there. And then also going out and trying to find the people who need care when we come out of this and make sure we're serving them as quickly as possible. And I think, you know, obviously, the reason we want to do this first and foremost is because people need care. There are people with cancer, there are people with heart conditions, there are people suffering in pain from orthopedic issues that need our care, right? So that's the first thing. Second thing is financially we need this, but also, you know, this isn't just we're coming out of this and then we have a horizon to figure it out. Dr. Fauci yesterday, who's the, you know, the leader, in terms of scientists at the federal level, kind of guiding us here, talked yesterday about a potential for a new wave coming back in the fall. So Jared, that's where we want to kind of start here, because I know you've been studying some data on, let's just call it COVID part two or the second wave or whatever we want to call it. And let's talk a little bit about that. So first, why don't you share the resources that you've been leveraging to kind of move through this scenario planning about a potential wave two?
Sure. Yeah. So we've looked at hopefully a broad range of things, but kind of look to experts to kind of like look at how they forecasted pieces. We think there's some uniquely qualified people here. University of Washington Medicine, I believe Ben Fuqua last week kind of mentioned this as a great modeling tool for projections of peak resources. It's obviously some big changes in the last few weeks as we've monitored it with other clients. And you know, that's been our main source for peak resource use, though we've looked at others. An interview with the CDC director and now yesterday conversations from Dr. Fauci about the rebound. Bill Gates, I think, has a pretty unique perspective on therapies and therapeutic options because of his launch of the new therapeutics accelerator that will hopefully be a huge boon to reduce the severity of cases. And then finally, New York Times and The Guardian and others have all covered off on the length of time to vaccine development, production, and maybe even a little bit about participation. So we kind of use some sources there. And then the last one I'll mention, there's some really cool work being done in the sociology department of Northwestern that talks about the kind of the impact on the human psyche. So that's kind of been factored in a little bit here as well.
So the one thing we hear a lot about the University of Washington model, and it seems to have emerged as, you know, the model that we're using at a federal level and a lot of other people point to. And I think there's a couple of important points. Well, really one important point to it, because it's showing some peaks that are even earlier than most folks assumed. For example, it's showing peaks, I don't know if it's nationally or in some markets as of this weekend. But the important kind of asterisk, which is more than an asterisk, is its projections assume lockdown continues through the end of May. And so that's more aggressive than most of what we're hearing out in the, at least from the federal response, right? Definitely a desire to try to open the economy back up and move us out of lockdown before the end of May. But if we do that, that would impact those peaks. Either the peaks would stretch longer or they might rebound because the risk we would be putting ourselves in. So just some important things to note about that. We would encourage people to go out and study more about that model. But Jared, you've pulled together some scenarios. So why don't you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. And I want to talk about the value of scenarios here. They're really not meant to be a complete projection of the future, but hopefully a way for us to think and discuss kind of what may happen so that we can be asking the right questions before we get to that moment. It's meant to increase our agility as marketers and communicators so that we know what to prepare for. So helpful for things like scenario planning from a communications perspective, or kind of what campaigns you may run in market to kind of help folks understand the need, or even how we might need to like dial up volume and make sure we have the capacity to help folks with the surgeries that they need at the time they need them. So there's those four data sources we've kind of broken apart into four pieces here. The first is the peak resource use date. That's 4/11 in the U.S. One of the later states we're working with is Virginia, where we see that as late as 4/20. Obviously, to Chris's point earlier, that could vary pretty significantly. The second piece, this is from an interview with the CDC director, Dr. Redfield, and this is his kind of rough estimate was late fall to early winter, if there is that type of rebound. So that would kind of be the end, or maybe when we might see a pickup again of cases. The other kind of two important dates I'll bring up is that we may have some good therapeutic options to prevent severity 3 to 6 months away, based on some conversations you guys are already seeing, I'm sure, a whole bunch of announcements around clinical trials, but also some really interesting things around plasma donations and others that may be able to introduce antibodies. So those are all great options to kind of reduce severity and also reduce impact on the health systems we all nurture, but also on the public as a whole. And then finally, the last thing I'll mention there is the vaccine development. Now that's 12 to 18 months. 12 has been, I think, quoted as pretty rapid and aggressive. 18 months maybe being more realistic than that. But there's kind of two parts here. Getting to a vaccine is one, getting it approved, distributing that vaccine in a wide enough range to actually encourage enough folks to have enough immunity for us to reopen everything at full could take some time. So maybe a month timeline of 24 months for the entire period, just to get a sense of the depth and scope of this. So that's kind of the rough place we started. We have some questions that come from this, but Chris, any thoughts you'd want to share first?
No, and I know we're not suggesting that it's going to take 18 to 24 months to reopen everything, but I think that's the key, right? The more we reopen things, the more this can change. All the variables you just mentioned, right, Jared? So it goes to how we're dealing with lockdown and social distancing. It goes to those therapeutic options, how soon those come online and how powerful they are. It goes to the weather and the seasonality of any kind of disease like coronavirus or virus, I should say. And it goes to those vaccines. So there's a lot of variables that can impact this. And in again, it's scenario planning, but you've got to start somewhere, right?
And so now that we've given you all the things that may happen in the future, we'll actually just completely tell you why they won't work or all the big questions that introduce us, hopefully. So Chase, on the next slide, you'll actually see kind of a different view here where we just talk about kind of the big questions at every piece. So the first one I'll bring up is the slope of recovery. If your state sees really, really rapid recovery, a huge drop off quickly, it's going to have a pretty significant impact on how quickly you can also be less disruptive as a health system, where you might be reopening beds for specific surgical procedures. But there's all kinds of questions there. How do you get people comfortable with those pieces? Just heard a stat the other day that we're seeing a drop of 40% in strokes, people coming in for strokes. At some point, we had to make people comfortable enough with the hospital to come in for those really, really critical moments. If not, we'll have just as many problems later on. So we need to be able to quickly encourage people to get back when it is time. And that'll help inform comms and marketing, of course. Then there's that return to normalcy period. And I think this is going to be punctuated with isolated or regional outbreaks that you're going to see this very, very dramatically by area, if I had to make a guess. And that's really going to be driven a lot by our ability to test and the public health mechanisms that are in play, our ability to isolate folks when there is an outbreak. So, and if you guys have been hearing the conversation, there's a lot of need for those public health resources to be increased so we can have that period. But it also creates an interesting window when we can be talking about the services people need to get. And it may be even in a window that we might need to ensure happens quickly so that we can service all that pent-up demand and especially high acuity demand. There's probably some interesting questions here around what patients do we make sure get in now before there's ever any problems. I have no idea how we'll have those conversations as a country, but it'll be some big conversations to have. So before we go to the other two, any other thoughts, Chris, about these kind of upfront periods?
No, I think the kind of return to normalcy, which is the window we're talking about, where if there's going to be rapid recovery, it would have to happen there, assuming there is a second wave. I think that last point you made is really important, Jared. So, you know, who are we going to treat first, right? And what's interesting is in some of the health systems that we're working with, the drive for getting back to normal is starting as far down the organization as you can imagine. So it's physicians, not surprisingly. Right. So orthopedic physicians clamoring to get back up because they're the ones being financially hurt. And we're trying to think about this, like, look, this can't just be, that's kind of the tail wagging the dog. As an organization, you need to be thinking about this more holistically. But I think you bring up a great point. As a country, are we even going to have those conversations about who should be cared for first? My guess is probably not, or if we do, not in a way that's going to actually impact how systems move. It may impact them to some degree, but I would doubt, I mean, you weigh in here, Jared, I doubt that we would have some kind of federal decree or CMS decree, for example, the CMS coming down and saying, you shall see these patients first because of the severity of their conditions, and then you will see these patients. And then it was, my guess is there's no way that's happening, but it is something that you could imagine us even trying to have that conversation, but even trying to have it holistically within an organization is going to be tough.
Yeah, totally agree. There was some really interesting work done a little bit ago in Washington when they were kind of seeing the beginning swells of this, where they started talking about how do you choose the right patients to be treated for COVID-19 as a worst case scenario. And those conversations are some of the toughest our society can have. And I think you're right. I don't think there's even room to have that national conversation. So it'll likely come down to an organizational perspective, but one that, you know, for the sake of the people around us, we have to be thinking about now, I think. I will mention this second wave piece. You know, there's a question here, is it smaller than our original? Is it larger or sustained? I hope to goodness that it can't be larger with everything we've learned. Everything from the experts indicates that it can't be. Will we even have one? Maybe not, right? I mean, right. Honestly, mask wearing is probably going to become a norm, it feels like, for the next foreseeable future until the end of this. And if that's the case, you know, maybe that's something that will help slow down at least the individuals who, unfortunately, they may be spreading without knowing that up to a quarter of folks may not even have the virus and not have any symptoms or asymptomatic. And then I'll kind of mention this last piece is vaccine development, knowing that it's at this like long range out. The question I think we have a lot is participation rate. How many people will participate in a vaccine? We kind of already know the conversations about anti-vaxxers in other places, and not to be political about this, but it takes time to distribute the vaccine in a large enough area to create some good immunity. So I think these are some real factors we have to be ready for and kind of start thinking about how do we as healthcare and health system marketers make sure we amplify the public health messages that need to be out there, but also support them over the long term. So Chris, any other thoughts?
No, just remember, if you're listening to this, we will have, not only will we have the video version of this up, Chase, let's make sure we have these two slides available for people so they can just download those from our communications hub where we put the recap here for podcast listeners who can only hear what we're talking about. So I think it's helpful to see the visuals, but I think you can also follow what we're saying about essentially as soon as we come down off this mountain of the immediate crisis, there will be a window. And hopefully it's a really long window and there is no next bump. But I think Jared, you know, we didn't have him in these slides, but when we were talking beforehand, there was kind of four scenarios you were kind of playing with. And one was there is no, you know, redux of it, which is unlikely. Another one was it's bigger than the one we're in now, which is also unlikely. It's somewhere in the middle. And really, again, that just depends on how big and how long is it going to go.
Yeah, and I think this brings us to some pretty interesting implications of this. So we've kind of talked for a second about the public health implications of how we'll communicate those pieces, but also about communicating to the public about your hospitals being ready. I can see a lot of hospitals. This was brought up. We were meeting as a group of kind of strategists across the firm, and someone, Jeff Spear, I think, who hosted last week for a day as a fill-in for Chris, mentioned that we may have to talk about having separate entrances, and we may have to talk about separate designated zones, which will be a natural first step, and that goes to elevators and other places. So how do we create these really, really clear lanes so that folks coming in know they're safe and know that they need the medical treatment? We're going to be there for you. We're going to have the emergency room set up in the right way. We're going to have all these elements laid out. And that's just a huge communications role. That is operations and communications working seamlessly. So the time to have those conversations, it feels like, has to be now. If we're not having them now, we're going to be behind the eight ball when we're in the middle of recovery.
Yeah. And I think that the now kind of depends. What we've been advising people is it really is to look at that peak because, for example, we talked with the health system about rapid recovery planning. And they're so focused on COVID, nobody's going to be able to spend time thinking about what we're talking about now today. But today's different than a week from today. Honestly, that's how quickly it could move. And, you know, again, it varies by market and by organization, but really you should be starting the planning process for this in the latter half of April at some point. And if by May 1, you're not having a leadership committee that's focused on this, you're not thinking through, there's so many dynamics, just like you mentioned, the idea of, I mean, we talk a lot about customer journeys, right? Like patient journeys. It's going to be a disrupted patient journeys. You're going to have to understand what those are. And they may vary not just by organization, but by facility and by service line and by procedure. And how do you communicate those so that you're not bringing people into a situation that they're not ready for? And it's just going to be, there's a lot of work that's going to have to happen while we're still coming off the peak. Like you said, it's not a cliff. We don't go to the top and then drop down to zero. We're going to have to come down the other side of this mountain. And it's just going to be hard to do both of those things at once.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, every state's going to have a different approach and be, we've already heard some hospitals and the kind of the back channel of rumors that happen inside this world about hospitals setting dates for procedures to start again. Yeah. And as those things happen, you know, I think it's just going to be important for us to realize that there's going to be some subjectivity and some objectivity to this. And it's going to be, we have to be very agile margins at the current time. So getting ahead is the best way.
Yep. Somehow, Jared, you're muting, premature muting. You cut yourself off there. It's very respectful. It's very respectful of you. We have time for maybe one last thing. And I know that you and some other strategists at Revive have been exploring kind of the impact on consumers and how they act. And the only thing I'll throw out there is like, this does remind me of something like World War II or the Great Depression, where folks who lived through the Great Depression came out the other side and had mindset of like, I don't buy anything unless I have the money for it. You do not go into debt, as one example. And so we're starting to kind of explore that, not just healthcare focus, but overall, because that's going to impact healthcare. Do you want to talk about one dynamic that we were exploring, even though, of course, we don't have all the answers yet, just to kind of tease it out?
Yeah. One thing, I think one big question I've had is, will this bring us together? Will we be fundamentally different, like in joining together as a society in a new way? And the research I mentioned earlier from Northwestern, the sociology department there has some really interesting, I think, implications. First off, unlike 9/11, maybe there's not been this huge increase in patriotism, mostly because I think that's a natural, this isn't as much as political thing, more medical piece. But there's actually been a slight decrease in social trust, which I'm hoping that is just, you know, maybe that's polling, I don't know, but I'm hoping that's not going to be the case. But I was really emboldened by the fact that when asked specifically, 64% of Americans said they're not willing to let others get sick to keep the economy safe and to keep it going. So for me, maybe there is a coming together and about a resolve to at least protect the health of other Americans, maybe not in terms of, other social dynamics, but we will see how that plays out over time.
You were emboldened, and maybe this is just glass half full, glass half empty kind of. I look at that and go, that means 36% of the people said, yeah, it's okay if people get sick and die so that my 401k can recover quicker. And look, it's not one or the other. We know that this is a complicated thing. And we've of course heard people literally say, you know, we should let some people die so our economy doesn't suffer. On one hand, we don't want to let anybody die that doesn't have to die or get sick. On the other, we also understand that we can't have our economy completely collapse and put hundreds of millions of people, potentially 200 million, whatever it is, tens of millions of people out on the street, whatever that looks like, right? So there, of course, has to be some kind of balance. But just morally, I would have liked to see that 64% higher, Jared.
We might see the increase. You never know, Chris. I mean, we can watch out for that, right?
It's going to depend on how things change when we come out of this. And people talk about Sweden, where Sweden didn't take a lot of the lockdown kind of steps that we've taken. And so it's hard to know. Part of the problem with this is you do these things, and if you're successful, you don't see cases. So it's very tempting for people to go, well, we're fine. We should just go ahead and go back out there. When actually the reason you're fine is you're doing the things that you've been doing and you should continue to do them. But we will see one way or the other, right?
I hope shared sacrifice brings us together. I will be the optimist who says it will bring us together. I'll go on that limb.
No, I'm with you. And I think overall it actually has done that. So I'm with you. I will join you in the optimism camp. Chase, Are you with us on the optimism?
I'm all in.
Yeah. All right, good, 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 good. That's a good way to, it's a good way to end the show on a positive note. So Jared, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have you back. Chase, as always, thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Glad to do it.
Remember to let us know if there's something you'd like us to cover. You can email me at cab@thinkrevivehealth.com. You can also go to our communications hub and provide feedback there. Remember that we will post the recap there. Subscribe at iTunes for the podcast. Tomorrow, we're joined by Stephanie Weirwell. She's from Revive Health, and she's going to be talking about the changing role of content and how we can leverage it during the crisis. And what else? Did I cover everything? I think I covered everything. One last message. Every time we sign off, we just want to thank all of you who are listening, the marketers, the communicators at hospitals and health systems. You're doing such important work. I think you all know that, but we just want to continue to put that out there. The work you're doing is so critical to helping the patients at your organization and also helping your organizations overall get through this, but also helping all of us get through this crisis. So we know it can be really tough. We know you're working super crazy hours. Just hang in there. Keep up the good fight. We'll be back tomorrow and every day until this all passes. So thank you for joining, and we will talk to you tomorrow.